1590 AM Denmark, W250 CV Green Bay,
and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. Just days after two Democratic lawmakers in Tennessee were expelled from the state house for violating decorum rules during a gun reform protest, they could be on their way back into their seats. Both are expected to be reinstated by their local councils that are charged with naming a replacement. One of the two, Justin Jones, tells ABC News what he thought of the initial vote to expel.
I think it was a lynch mob. What happened was a political lynching. My colleagues not only tried to make an example of us, but they lynched our democracy. They killed democracy in Tennessee.
U.S. government continues to investigate the leak of sensitive military information. It was then posted online. Some of it had top secret markings. Pope Francis celebrated Easter Mass and delivered his Easter message in St. Peter's Square. He put the spotlight on the sick, the poor, and those enduring tumult in their lives, including refugees. Tiger Woods says a flare-up of plantar fasciitis forced his withdrawal from the Masters. Brooks Koepka is in the lead. This is ABC News. There's concern about security in the Holy Land as Easter, Passover, and Ramadan overlap. Israel facing attacks in response to a raid last week on a mosque. Friday, an attack in Tel Aviv killed an Italian tourist. ABC's Matt Gutman has more from Jerusalem.
And it's worth noting that in the exchanges of fire between Israel and Palestinians, rockets and Israeli airstrikes, there have been no casualties. And it speaks to both sides talking and signaling about wanting de-escalation at this point. And with hundreds of thousands here in Jerusalem trying to celebrate Easter Sunday and Ramadan and Passover all at the same place at the same time, that has gone smoothly so far.
NFL star Deshaun Watson of the Cleveland Browns has served his NFL suspension, but he still faces a deposition Monday. There are two remaining civil lawsuits against him for sexual misconduct. He's settled lawsuits with two dozen other women who accused him of being sexually inappropriate. Brian Clark, ABC News.
This is so good.
Why are you eating so much popcorn?
Well, I'm making a difference for Wisconsin schools, and I was able to easily shop online.
I mean, it does look yummy.
OMG, you've got to try this cheddar jalapeno.
Mmm, it is good.
Oh, and I ordered a bunch of other gourmet flavors, chocolate delight, cookies and cream, and even dill pickle, delivered to my door. And I help Wisconsin schools in the process. Go to the Wisconsin Popcorn Shop at civicmedia.us/shop. That's civicmedia.us/shop. And order now. The shop closes April 10th. You know him as the nose tackle for the green and gold.
1993 to 1999, and again 2001 to 2003.
125 games, 292 tackles, 7 sacks, and a Super Bowl ring. But there's more to life than stats, and there's more to life than football.
You're about to find out.
Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, featuring Packers legend Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram.
Saturday and Sunday at 1 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
Civic Media radio stations, providing your news, conversations, and fun you won't find anywhere else.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Two American banks collapsed in the past week. As Eric Tegedoff reports, some consumers are considering alternatives like credit unions.
Troy Stang is head of the Go West Credit Union Association, which represents more than 300 credit unions in Oregon and 5 other states. He says tumult in the financial market historically generates interest in the local structure of credit unions.
Whether it was with the dot-com bust, whether it was with the activities that led up to the Great Recession, consumers at their kitchen tables started having these conversations more intentionally about who is it that we do our financial services with.
Silicon Valley Bank's collapse is the second largest bank collapse in U.S. history. To get depositors their money, the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation has stepped in. Stang notes that National Share Insurance Fund, administered by the National Credit Union Administration, is the equivalent regulator for his institutions and is paid for by the credit union system. Stang says credit unions are not-for-profit and member-owned.
We're not accountable to Wall Street investors. We're not accountable to other forces outside of our membership. And so it's a much different model.
Stang says many of the credit unions in his association have spent the last week reassuring customers and noting differences in their institution structure from others. He adds a strong financial system is important for consumers, regardless of which institution they bank with. I'm Eric Tegedoff. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
And this is Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
VA has a new life insurance program for veterans with service-connected disabilities called Veterans Affairs Life Insurance, or VA Life. VA Life benefits include up to $40,000 in coverage, no medical questions to enroll, and no time limit to apply if you are age 80 or under. Veterans can apply, receive an instant decision, and manage their policy online. Learn more about VA Life or apply online by visiting va.gov/life-insurance. Protect those who matter most with VA Life Insurance.
This is the story of a very special woman. Just a few knew about her superpowers. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
To learn more, go to our website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome. Grab your favorite morning beverage and join us for Morning Cannolis with Jim Santel.
You don't know me, but I'm your brother.
Sampling the news desserts of the week, here is your host, Jim Santel.
Welcome back to this, our second hour on this wonderful Saturday morning, April 8th, 2023. This is, as always, our weekly review, our analysis, our discussion with you of the most important news stories in the areas of law, in government, and yes, the aspiration for justice in America. Thank you so much for joining me again this morning for our second hour when we talk about all of those issues. Always inviting your phone calls, my producer and me, Anya, at 844-967-2789. Anya, taking your phone calls, getting those in to talk with me about some of these important stories as well. Appreciate those tremendously and value your insights and comments as always. In our first hour, we spent a lot of time talking about this major news story related to the unprecedented, to this point in American history, the unprecedented charging of a former President of the United States of America for criminal conduct. And that again by the DA, the Manhattan DA, his name is Alvin Bragg, on 34 different counts involving the falsification of business records, financial records, strapping those into allegations of tax and election fraud along the way, resulting in felony charges against the former defendant. He has been released. He is back in South Florida, but will nonetheless be defending against this matter. We talked about what's going to happen between now and then, likely a lot of pretrial proceedings, motions brought by his attorneys in defense of the case, responses by the government itself to those motions, motions to dismiss, motions to suppress, other proceedings that under our system of justice, our rule of law, proceedings in the state system, in the federal system, are contemplated to ensure integrity in all of this, and yes, ensure the integrity of the defense posture itself, ensuring that the defendant gets a fair, not only hearing, but series of hearings, including a trial. We don't yet know what the trial is going to be all about. That will be defined, obviously, in the months ahead. We've got a pretty good sense of what the focus of it's going to be based upon the stories set forth in the accounts provided by the DA to this point. We also understand, of course, that that jury will be impaneled in Manhattan. It will be a New York State jury, and lots of questions, of course, about whether or not Donald Trump could ever get a fair trial in America. I would offer in connection with that question, which we're not facing yet on this morning, April 8th, nonetheless, highly likely that a judge, this Judge Merchant, can indeed, after talking presumably with perhaps hundreds of people at the time of jury selection right before the start of the trial, can in fact impanel a jury of jurors who can look at the evidence, dispassionately. Plainly, they will know about Donald Trump. He was the president of the United States of America, much in the news virtually every day in recent years, including to this day. The question asked of them, the important legal question, even the ethical question, if you will, is whether or not they can set aside any other views, perspectives that they have had about this defendant in this case before them and decide the case exclusively, only based upon the evidence that they see in the courtroom, the witnesses, the documents presented to them, and make a determination beyond a reasonable doubt about whether or not this defendant is guilty, again, beyond a reasonable doubt, of the offense conduct set forth in the indictment. That's the question presented to them. And I would offer to you that even a case like this, which has a huge amount of publicity, the defendant well known not only to the jurors, but also to all of us, can in fact get a fair and a decent trial in America. I would also note that highly unlikely that that trial will happen anytime soon, certainly not this calendar year, arguably not even next year. But if it does, happening, of course, while the former president is himself a candidate for his reelection to the presidency, he announced that a number of weeks ago. He is now going to be under indictment while he is campaigning to resume office as our chief executive. Nothing in our Constitution prevents him from serving in that capacity. There is only one footnote to that, which, of course, is under the 14th Amendment. There is this provision in the wake of the Civil War inserted into our Constitution. It says no one who engaged in an insurrectionist type activity can serve. Now, lots of questions about how that is enforced and where you get the authority to enforce that. This particular prosecution coming out of Manhattan does not allege anything related to the January 6th matter. These are all events that happened again in 2016, 2017, years before the insurrection itself. So highly unlikely the 14th Amendment could, under some circumstance, be invoked to prevent the Donald Trump from assuming once again the presidency. Nonetheless, the prospect of a campaign for the presidency going on while he himself is under indictment, charged in Manhattan and maybe other places as well, maybe in Georgia, maybe in the federal system as well, maybe other places too, for crimes, certainly civil matters in which he has also been exposed. 2024 going to be a fascinating year, again, unprecedented, a word that we use a lot because all of these things have been unprecedented in the history of our nation. Let's turn to another major story breaking just last night. Significant. Why is it significant? Because once again, it harkens back to discussions that we have had about privacy rights in America, the importance of privacy rights under our Constitution, a concept that was first identified by the Supreme Court way back in 1965 in a case called Griswold versus Connecticut, identifying what's called a penumbra of rights coming out of the Constitution, one of them being the right to privacy, the right to have government stay out of your life, if you will. And that identified with clarity and with uniform consistency until last year. Until June of last year, when, as you all well know, the United States Supreme Court, a divided court, issued its case in Dobbs versus Reproductive Services, finding, overturning 49 years of precedent of history in America, finding that indeed when Justice Blackmun issued Roe versus Wade way back in 1973, that he was wrong, that the Supreme Court, the majority that joined him, was wrong in finding that there is indeed a privacy right under the Constitution to reproductive services and in particular to abortion, overturning that major landmark decision back in 1973, finding that no such right inheres, is vested in the Constitution, and so sending all these matters back into the states. All of that by preliminary information and background to what happened in recent weeks coming to a head just last night, Friday night. Last night, a federal judge in Texas, a federal district court judge, a trial judge, not an appellate court judge, although once again, we will talk about that in just a moment. A federal judge in Texas issued what he had been threatening and pretty much indicating he would going to be doing over the course of recent weeks, a preliminary ruling, a preliminary injunction, stopping, invalidating the Food and Drug Administration's 23-year approval of the abortion pill mifepristone. This pill that accomplishes abortion if medically administered again by a doctor upon this prescription. It's an unprecedented order. Never before, once again, happening in the history of this type of undertaking. The FDA, again, having determined over the course of many, many years that mifepristone is safe for this purpose and for other purposes related to childbirth, especially when it comes to miscarriages. The FDA being told by this federal judge, his name is Matthew Kaczmarek, being told by the FDA, by him, that it can no longer authorize the use of this drug, mifepristone, to get abortions in states where abortion is legal, not just in those that are trying to restrict it. And the significance of that in his order is that according to the terms of it, it has nationwide implications for that injunctive order being entered by Judge Kaczmarek. And significantly, two things happened in the wake of his saying that this abortion pill can no longer be used. Why, in the wake of the Dobbs decision, can no longer be justified in not only Texas, but under the federal law generally, issues that order. He does, in fact, stay his order for 7 days to permit the FDA to appeal his decision to the Fifth Circuit, which it certainly, almost certainly, the government will do. The Attorney General has already said the department, having reviewed very quickly this order coming out of the federal court in Texas, says that today's decision, according to Merrick Garland, overturns the FDA's expert judgment. Again, this according to the Department of Justice, rendered over two decades ago, that mifepristone is safe and effective. Garland goes on to say that the Justice Department would ask the decision be stayed while the appeal is pending. Again, the judge has done that, at least for 7 days. It's entirely possible the Department of Justice could go to the appeals court and ask for an extension of the stay so that it does not go into effect. I said the department is reviewing the ruling in that matter and also in a second matter. Again, quite literally within minutes last night of Judge Kaczmarek's ruling, this unprecedented order invalidating the FDA's 23-year approval of the abortion pill. Within almost minutes of that, what happens is that a judge, another federal judge in Washington State, issues a ruling that directly contradicts that Texas decision, says, no, you're wrong about that, and orders the FDA to make no changes to the availability of mifepristone going forward. Again, national implications, or at least for the 12 states in which the attorneys general have advocated for that. And so we've got today these conflicting orders by two federal judges, one indicating that the abortion pill is no longer to be distributed, again, giving a stay of that while an appeal can go forward. Another judge in the state of Washington saying just the opposite, that this process 23 years ago that the FDA undertook to ensure the integrity and the legitimacy, the health basis for this pill is in fact valid, and ordering the FDA to do nothing to make changes in the availability of mifepristone nationwide. Again, the Department of Justice appealing that Texas decision, and also, of course, looking at the Washington case as well. I'm going to chat more about the implications of that when we come back in our next segment here, talking about privacy rights, talking about the implications of what happened just last night in federal courts, and talking about its implications for all of us in our nation. Stay with us for that discussion.
this is so good.
Why are you eating so much popcorn?
Well, I'm making a difference for Wisconsin schools, and I was able to easily shop online.
I mean, it does look yummy.
OMG, you've got to try this cheddar jalapeno.
Mmm, it is good.
Oh, and I ordered a bunch of other gourmet flavors, chocolate delight, cookies and cream, and even dill pickle, delivered to my door. And I help Wisconsin schools in the process. Go to the Wisconsin Popcorn Shop at civicmedia.us/shop. That's civicmedia.us/shop and order now. The shop closes April 10th.
Talking to your kids about the dangers of vaping can be hard. Getting them to listen to hot gossip is easy. So here's some drama you could share with your kid. Dude, did you hear about Cassie and Jake? No, but did you hear that vaping can cause irreversible lung damage and nicotine affects brain development? Nuh-uh. You don't need to gossip if you want to have an open conversation about vaping. So if you want to get tips on when and how to talk to your kids, visit talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
You know him as the nose tackle for the green and gold.
1993 to 1999, and again 2001 to 2003.
125 games, 292 tackles, 7 sacks, and a Super Bowl ring. But there's more to life than stats, and there's more to life than football.
You're about to find out.
Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, featuring Packers legend Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram.
Saturday and Sunday at 1. On Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
Here's your updated forecast. Sunshine mixed with clouds at times this afternoon, with daytime highs approaching 63. Southwesterly winds 8 to 15 miles an hour. Chance for scattered rain showers. Tonight, lows dip down to about 47. Cloudy skies. Tomorrow, highs around 66. Partly cloudy Tuesday, with daytime highs approaching 72. With daytime highs approaching 73. 76 Wednesday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Ray Miller. Right now, it's 53.
News and talk. Up, down, and all around the Fox Valley. This is Civic Media.
WAUK 540 AM. Always streaming at waukradio.com.
This next segment of our morning discussion of law, government, and justice in America, chatting about this major decision coming out just last night out of a federal district court in Texas, finding that the FDA's 23-year-old approval of the abortion pill mifepristone is invalid and directing that it no longer be distributed. The judge there, Matthew Kaczmarek, issuing a stay of his own order only for 7 days to permit an appeal to go forward to the higher court, which is the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, which again plainly will entertain the argument about the legitimacy or lack thereof of this particular order. Again, out of the Washington state, just another order to the exact opposite, battling district court judges, if you will, across our nation. That judge finding that indeed the FDA is to make no changes to the availability of mifepristone, directly contrary to what Judge Kaczmarek has directed out of Texas. Now, why is this important? Well, once again, it comes in the wake, as we well know, of the Supreme Court's overruling, overturning the national right to abortion. The pills used in this medication, abortions, have increasingly become the focus of political and legal battles, which you have seen in the news. Witness what was happening and is happening just yesterday and today. Some conservative states, in addition to banning or restricting abortion in general, that is the practice in general, have begun considering, again, as you have seen in the media, some other legislation, some companion legislation that specifically targets these abortion pills. And so that is also going on legislatively, even while this is percolating up in the courts as well. Some lawsuits have been filed in an effort to preserve or expand access to medication abortion throughout the nation. And so we have exactly what was predicted in the wake of the decision of last June overturning Roe versus Wade. We have this patchwork throughout the United States of America, different states, different jurisdictions, with respect to all kinds of things that continues to confuse and make less clear the rights of Americans to privacy rights and abortion. The FDA and the Justice Department in all of these cases, certainly even advocating to some extent in legislative settings as well, that the claims in the lawsuit coming out of Texas are simply not based upon the merits. Said that the federal agency's rigorous reviews of mifepristone over many years, not just 23 years ago, but they continue to review this to determine whether or not the drug is safe and secure for its administration, repeatedly reaffirming decision to approve the drug, which blocks a hormone that allows a pregnancy to develop. And that's how this particular pill works. In a court filing in this Texas case, for example, the FDA said that overturning its approval of mifepristone would, quote, cause significant harm, depriving patients of a safe and effective drug that has been on the market for more than two decades. Now, again, this lawsuit filed, this companion lawsuit filed in Washington State, was intended undeniably as a direct challenge to that Texas case. And the attorneys general who filed that case in late February, and that was on the first day that Judge Kaczmarek could have issued a ruling. Its main claims sought to eliminate a framework for extra restrictions that the FDA has long applied to mifepristone. That suit in Washington also asked the judge to declare the FDA's approval of mifepristone lawful and valid, which is expressly what that judge did. Also, enjoining the FDA from taking any action to remove this drug, this pill, from the market or to reduce its availability. So what happens? Of course, all these cases may well be appealed to the courts of appeals, ultimately, probably headed to the United States Supreme Court, which, as we know, has found that there is not a privacy right under the Constitution to abortion, perhaps on a collision course with the Supreme Court down the road. Many drug providers indicating that indeed they're going to take steps to ensure that they're in compliance with the law, but also being told with some confusion this morning about what that law exactly is. Many of the providers saying they're going to make the drugs available, accessible to as many people as possible in this country, and that, again, the fact that this is not going into effect immediately does give us some solace that the world is not going to change today. But certainly this is a harbinger of things that could come and is a reason for great concern, not only with respect to the all-important right to abortion and to privacy rights, but generally to the expansion of privacy rights that has been the tradition of this country since 1965, frankly, even before that time. And so that's why these rulings, again, implementing in one direction the decision in Dobbs, in another direction, basically saying that if the decision about abortion rights is now relegated to and delegated to the states, that in the Washington case, that's a situation where we're going to enforce the right, the privacy right, going to ensure that people have access to this pill. We know as well, of course, that the pill is sometimes used in combination with a second abortion medication, misoprostol, which is used safely on its own in many countries where mifepristone is less available. So that drug is also still out there. Some of the legislation being passed today makes general reference to drugs generally. All of this going to be the subject, obviously, of continued litigation in federal, arguably state courts as well. And as I indicated, also much the focus of legislation around our nation, and including challenges right here in the state of Wisconsin going to the right to reproductive rights under our state constitution, fundamental rights of human beings in our state. All of that to introduce again, of course, our return to the Supreme Court, which we've talked about a lot on this broadcast. Going to spend the remaining segments of our morning talking once again about the Supreme Court. And we're going to begin that discussion right after this break, beginning with what it's going to be doing in the month of April and in the times just ahead. Stay with us for that discussion, not only about those processes, but also the things that's going to be taking up both inside the court and, yes, that's right, outside the court as well. Ethics once again on the docket of our United States Supreme Court. Stay with us for that discussion.
Civic Media for the Fox Valley.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. Just days after two Democratic lawmakers in Tennessee were expelled from the state house for violating decorum rules during a gun reform protest, they could be on their way back into their seats. Both are expected to be reinstated by their local councils that are charged with naming a replacement. One of the two, Justin Jones, tells ABC News what he thought of the initial vote to expel.
I think it was a lynch mob. What happened was a political lynching. My colleagues not only tried to make an example of us, but they lynched our democracy. They killed democracy in Tennessee.
The U.S. government continues to investigate the leak of sensitive military information. It was then posted online. Some of it had top secret markings. Pope Francis celebrated Easter Mass and delivered his Easter message in St. Peter's Square. He put the spotlight on the sick, the poor, and those enduring tumult in their lives, including refugees. Tiger Woods says a flare-up of plantar fasciitis forced his withdrawal from the Masters. Brooks Koepka is in the lead. This is ABC News.
Oh, now wait until you pull up to the stop and go light. But when you do, go ahead and save the Civic Media station to one of your presets. The Kripescast with me, Charlie Behrens, and also on the Civic Media app.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. A Madison law firm is planning to challenge the state's legislative maps. The Cap Times reports it will happen sometime after Janet Protasiewicz is sworn in as Wisconsin Supreme Court Justice in August. Law Forward says the current maps are gerrymandered and that state government is not accountable to voters. Milwaukee County's population fell by more than 20,000 people since the start of the pandemic. In the meantime, the Census Bureau says surrounding counties grew. Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley tells the Journal Sentinel it's proof the region needs more resources in order to grow. In sports, the Brewers are winners of five of their first six games. They host St. Louis tonight. The Bucks welcome Memphis. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
This is so good.
Why are you eating so much popcorn?
Well, I'm making a difference for Wisconsin schools, and I was able to easily shop online.
I mean, it does look yummy.
OMG, you've got to try this cheddar jalapeno.
Mmm, it is good.
Oh, and I ordered a bunch of other gourmet flavors, chocolate delight, cookies and cream, and even dill pickle, delivered to my door. And I help Wisconsin schools in the process. Go to the Wisconsin Popcorn Shop at civicmedia.us/shop. That's civicmedia.us/shop. And order now. The shop closes April 10th.
VA has a new life insurance program for veterans with service-connected disabilities called Veterans Affairs Life Insurance, or VA Life. VA Life benefits include up to $40,000 in coverage, no medical questions to enroll, and no time limit to apply if you are age 80 or under. Veterans can apply, receive an instant decision, and manage their policy online. Learn more about VA Life or apply online by visiting va.gov/life-insurance. Protect those who matter most with VA Life Insurance.
This is the story of a very special woman. Just a few knew about her superpowers. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
You were supposed to get a colon cancer screening, but stuff came up.
We did have to pick up the twins from practice.
But on the way, we hit a giant pothole.
If you are 45 and older, don't let stuff get in the way of your screening. Visit the Colorectal Cancer Alliance at ccalliance.org.
Radio, Lou?
I mean, you're no kid rock, Lou.
Follow the Devil's Advocates on Facebook and Twitter.
We are back this morning, April 8th, 2023, our discussion of law, government, and justice in America, turning in these remaining segments to, yes, once again, the United States Supreme Court. things going on there, both inside the courtroom and outside the courtroom. We're going to be talking about not only processes coming up in the next few weeks, but about a couple of important cases that have been argued recently and a decision by the court to take on another case involving disability rights in America, the Americans with for Disabilities Act. Before we do that, let's take another caller calling in this morning, Joe from Madison. And Joe, great to have you with us once again.
A vigorous and wonderful discussion. Really enjoyed very much. I wanted to check a couple of things here and to get your reaction to them. So there are 2 points to start off with. First off, I find it fascinating when you said that in the previous discussion about Mr. Trump, you said that it was very important, of course, to ensure integrity so that if it takes a long time to move through this situation of trying to judge whether he's done things that are illegal, then that's just the way it goes. Whereas here we have a judge who turns over something that's been in process for 20 years, and 54% of abortions now are they use these this drug abortion rather than having a surgery abortion. So all of a sudden, for 54% of abortions now are ? Can they go forward with this ruling by one judge who is avowedly anti-abortion? Has made no bones about it. So the question I would ask, I find it ironic that, you know, when it comes to the president, we take our time and make sure it's done carefully. But with this, overnight, this one judge can issue a ruling. I'd love to hear your opinion about that. And the second thing I would ask is, does this not open up anybody making, because I can't see when the articles that I've read that he has specific knowledge of injury and harm, you know, coming from the assignment of these drugs to women. So what is he relying on? He is a judge. He's not a scientist. What is in the documents that makes him say these are unsafe? And if he can make that argument, then why couldn't an ardent Catholic say contraception is unsafe and the FDA should not license any contraception? Why couldn't an ardent Scientologist say any drugs that are used to combat depression, because we don't believe in it, are unsafe? I'm hamstringed to understand what is the actual scientific evidence that this man has advanced to say we need to look at this drug that has been in the marketplace for 20 years and has been reviewed continually as part of that. Do you have you seen anything that would suggest that? I'm curious to hear your reaction to those 2 points, Jim.
Absolutely.
Thanks very much, as always.
Joe, thank you for calling in. Great points both. One about integrity goes to the core of what we do in the rule of law here in America. The other about the predicates for decisions being made today. And I can provide you some general insight into both of them. Appreciate the very good questions. Yes, indeed. We anticipate that everybody who undertakes to make decisions about important issues in our nation, whether you're presiding over a criminal trial in Manhattan or you're a federal district court judge in Texas, does so with integrity and also does so without political animus, without partisan animation. Any of those kinds of things. That's the reason why we have, again, ethics principles and guidelines, which we will talk about in just a few moments or so. The inconsistency that you identify, Joe, I think is compelling. And one of the great concerns that I have about the decision in Texas is not only on its merits, which I'll get to in just a moment or so, but also about this notion that you are bringing onto the court your own particular views about the legitimacy of abortion. As people often say, there is now, and there always has been, a decision to make. It has always been a pro-choice approach in America as long as there's been acknowledgement under the Constitution of this privacy right. By going in this opposite direction, by opening up this door, it now enables a judge, like the judge in Texas and others, to bring into a system that should have integrity, apolitical integrity, nonpartisan integrity, maybe even other individual perspectives based upon one's faith or one's view about even the human condition, if you will. All of those things, they plainly animate people, but they necessarily need to be set aside. And that leads to the second point, which is very much flowing from the first one, which is how can you set that aside? The answer is you set that aside by virtue of what is submitted to you as a judge. And you decide, as a jury does, on the record in front of you, the facts presented, the kinds of things that the litigants present to you in favor and in opposition to doing certain things. And so what happened in this particular matter, including the matter in Washington State, the judge, again, does not write on a clean slate. He is presented, for example, by the Department of Justice on behalf of the FDA with a huge, compelling record. You can go online and you can look at these presentations made by the Department of Justice on behalf of the FDA about 23 years of consistency, about assurance based upon testing, based upon returning to testing over years, that it makes a compelling, overwhelming case that this particular pill is not, in fact, threatening the lives or the livelihoods of women who may take it. And that's the record in front of him. And so to your question, you know, on what basis does one decide that that record is not legitimate? Well, plainly in our system, again, there are arguments made by the opposition. I would offer to you, Joe, and to others who are also asking the same good question that Joe has raised this morning, that opposition is not fact-based. It's not based upon this record. Because if it was, you'd get the result of judges like that in Washington and other places around the country who are looking at this based upon what? What have we always talked about? The science, right? The facts, the things that can be proven in court, the medical people, Joe, as you just indicated, the doctors who come forward who say after 23 years, after years, even before the FDA approval, that we've looked at this, we've tested it, and judges necessarily rely upon what? Expert testimony, experts who come in, who know, who are experts in these areas, who know what they're talking about. And so you're concerned, Joe, both about the integrity of the process and also about the legitimacy of the decision. I share your concerns. It is the kind of thing, if you take a look at the record in this matter, including the judge's opinion, you will see that he dismisses. He dismisses in large part, if not completely, this record that is before him of facts, of science. And that is why, going forward to the appeals court, to the Fifth Circuit, ultimately probably to the United States Supreme Court, the U.S. Department of Justice arguing on behalf of America, arguing on behalf of, again, access to this particular mechanism for accomplishing abortion and also addressing miscarriages and other medical situations. They will rely upon the science and the facts and say, Judge, set aside your own particular views and look at the science, look at the facts. Joe, your encouragement is well placed. I hope and I trust that judges in the Fifth Circuit, other judges around the country, listen to precisely that kind of thing, bring integrity to this process, and ensure that the facts are the things you're relying upon, and not, as you've also indicated, your longstanding view in opposition to abortion, which is not necessarily premised upon the facts related to this particular pill and this particular medical procedure, which has in fact been confirmed over and over and over again by our government. So great point, Joe. Appreciate the comment. Appreciate that we will continue to look at all of this as we go forward. Again, including very likely heading toward the Supreme Court at some point soon. I promised we would talk about the Supreme Court, and indeed we will this morning. Much in the news again. A couple of programs ago, broadcasts ago, I talked about the fact that under pressure from members of Congress, the federal judiciary revised its financial disclosure rules to require that federal judges, all of them, including Supreme Court justices, be more specific when disclosing some non-business-related travel. Under a thing called the Ethics in Government Act, judges, including Supreme Court judges, are required to report information related to gifts of more than minimal value that are received from any source other than a relative, right? That makes some perfect sense. Significantly, the law, this Ethics in Government Act, provides an exemption for food, lodging, or entertainment received as personal hospitality. And you can tell where I'm going with this, right? Based upon events of just recent days. The new regulations, again imposed before the news of recent date, now requires that judges disclose non-business stays at resorts, The use of private jets in instances where, for example, a third party reimburses a host for costs that are associated with that visit. The judicial conference, which passes this amendment to the Ethics in Government Act, basically saying you've got to report all these things, food, lodging, entertainment, regardless of its source, regardless of whether it's a personal hospitality extension, it closes this large loophole that allowed individuals and companies with interests before the courts secretly to shower judges, including the justices, with lavish gifts, including travel, okay? And until the change, the true benefactors could remain hidden by calling the gifts simply personal hospitality. All of that changed. All of that changed a couple of years ago, days ago, based upon this change in the rules applied now to all federal judges. Why is this significant? Well, we have learned just in recent days that Supreme Court Justice, Associate Justice, his name is Clarence Thomas, has come under attention based upon reporting by Politico. And in particular, the Politico journalists have discovered that the Supreme Court Justice, again, Clarence Thomas, has in fact taken travel offered by a fellow named Harlan Crow. He's a Texas real estate business, billionaire, a businessman as well. He's traveled by jet and yacht at the invitation of Mr. Crow. The vacations, which took place over apparently nearly two decades of time, including trips to Indonesia and the Bohemian Grove, which is an exclusive retreat somewhere nestled in the redwoods of Northern California, other trips out there taken by Supreme Court Justice, again, significantly prior to the change in the rules. And that is significant. Because once this is released, once this information is released about these prior trips given to him by Harlan Crow around the world, plainly hundreds of thousands of dollars in benefits, it underscores, number one, the need for the change in the rule, which was accomplished after these trips were taken. It accomplishes, again, a change for future reporting, and it prompts for Justice Thomas the obligation which he plainly felt to come forward just yesterday, to come forward and say that he had followed, again, before this rule was changed, the advice of what he called colleagues and others in the judiciary when he did not disclose these lavish gifts and travel from this wealthy donor, this wealthy friend of his named Harlan Crow, this Texas real estate billionaire. Now, why is this significant? Well, it may well be that Justice Thomas, again, is not in violation of the rule as it existed before, because as indicated, this huge loophole that required contemplated the non-disclosure of trips and other gifts, other benefits given to you by someone in a personal capacity. The justice yesterday says, early in my tenure at the court, again, before this rule was changed, I sought guidance, he said, from my colleagues and others in the judiciary, and was advised that this sort of personal hospitality from close personal friends who did not have business before the court was not reportable. He went on to say, I have endeavored to follow that counsel throughout my tenure and have always sought to comply with the disclosure guidelines. He promises that in the future, of course, under the new rule, now changed, that he will comply with those guidelines adopted by the judicial conference, the policymaking body, which again implemented this rule. And so, presumably, we'll get more reporting from the justice as he, in fact, pursues these other personal engagements. But we know, again, as a result of his disclosures, these disclosures made through Politico, that he did, in fact, engage in hundreds of thousands of dollars of benefits. When we come back, we'll talk about why even that information is significant when it comes to the integrity of our Supreme Court. Stay with us for that discussion.
This is so good.
Why are you eating so much popcorn?
Well, I'm making a difference for Wisconsin schools, and I was able to easily shop online.
I mean, it does look yummy.
OMG, you've got to try this cheddar jalapeno.
It is good. good.
Oh, and I ordered a bunch of other gourmet flavors, chocolate delight, cookies and cream, and even dill pickle delivered to my door. And I helped Wisconsin schools in the process. Go to the Wisconsin Popcorn Shop at civicmedia.us/shop. That's civicmedia.us/shop and order now. The shop closes April 10th. Weather brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese and Popcorn Shop at civicmedia.us/shop.
Home of buttery popcorn treats and make your mouth water.
Caramel, cookies and cream, strawberry shortcake, and more. Civicmedia.us/shop.
Part of the proceeds benefit Wisconsin athletic programs.
Talking to your kids about the dangers of vaping can be hard. Getting them to listen to hot gossip is easy. So here's some drama you could share with your kid. Dude, did you hear about Cassie and Jake? No, but did you hear that vaping can cause irreversible lung damage and nicotine affects brain development? Nuh-uh. You don't need to gossip if you want to have an open conversation about vaping. So if you want to get tips on when and how to talk to your kids, visit talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
Moving Day, a walk for Parkinson's, is happening around the country. Together we can unite in the fight against Parkinson's disease in a safe but exciting and fun way. So let's get moving. Join the Parkinson's Foundation to learn more and register at movingdaywalk.org.
Here's your updated forecast. Sunshine mixed with clouds at times this afternoon, with daytime highs approaching 63. Southwesterly winds 8 to 15 miles an hour. Chance for scattered rain showers. Tonight, lows dip down to about 47. Cloudy skies. Tomorrow, highs around 66. Partly cloudy Tuesday, with daytime highs approaching 72. With daytime highs approaching 73. 76 Wednesday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Ray Miller. Right now, it's 53.
A fresh approach to finding common ground in the Fox Valley. This is Civic Media.
Civic Media.
News Talk Radio, streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
Oh yeah, baby. Like a fool I went and stayed too long.
And we are back for our final segment here at Morning Cannolis, talking once again about the United States Supreme Court and this issue percolating up and out beyond the bench itself. With respect to Associate Justice Clarence Thomas's disclosure by Politico that he received probably hundreds of thousands of dollars in benefits with respect to travel and other vacation plans made and followed by him and his wife, Ginny, also much in the news in the past, probably not in violation of the narrow interpretation of the law at the time, but certainly would have been in violation in the wake of the recent closing of the loophole, which now requires the disclosure of things, even if they are personal in nature, which plainly all of this may have been. Nonetheless, all of this focusing upon the Supreme Court, new attention when it comes to ethics. The chair of the Judiciary Committee, the Senate Judiciary Committee, Dick Durbin, said his panel is going to act following this report that the Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas accepted these luxury trips from this GOP donor. Those reports, again, that never made, never formally submitted by Clarence Thomas. Durbin saying that failure to report these gifts, even if the rule at the time did not absolutely oblige him to do so, Durbin said it's inconsistent with the ethical standards the American people expect of any public servant, let alone a justice of the Supreme Court. And again, as we have talked before, the reason why this is so significant is we have a Supreme Court that, again, even as some of these principles and guidelines are being tightened up so that this kind of thing cannot go on in the future, at a minimum, a justice is required to describe and disclose the fact that they have taken these kinds of benefits. Even though that is now being sewn up, the reality is that on April 8th of 2023, we still don't have a unified judicial code that restricts and imposes restrictions and guidelines upon our Supreme Court justices in a way that it does with respect to all the other federal judges, district court judges. We've talked about some of those this morning, appellate court judges as well, all of them with a strict code of ethics, not applicable to the United States Supreme Court justices, including in ways that probably would have required the disclosure of these kinds of things. Why do I mention that again this morning? Why is Dick Durbin as animated about this as he seems to be? The answer is that America should demand from the Chief Justice, John Roberts, should demand from all the justices that they work on and they complete. We know that they are working on it, but they need to complete now, come to a conclusion in putting together a judicial code that ensures not only transparency for who they are, what they do, but ensures that when their decisions come out, they are not the products of either a perceived conflict of interest or a real conflict of interest. And we know that Justice Thomas also has those issues as well. He has plainly ruled on cases specifically involving January 6th and Donald Trump, subpoenas, production of documents, in which his wife, Ginny, has also been a major advocate on the public domain, the public field, if you will. All those kinds of things raise conflicts of interest, certainly the appearance at a minimum that under other circumstances would require any good federal judge to recuse herself or himself, not with respect to this justice, because in part we do not have an ethics code that requires that. We know as well that the Chief Justice also has a spouse who provides employment services to a variety of different lawyers. That service may also have some implications when it comes to his ethical obligations to disclose that. We've talked about that in the past. All these kinds of things, the revelations of just the recent days about Justice Thomas's past involvement with this Texas billionaire who's provided him with these travel benefits, all of this indicating that Americans need to demand from our Supreme Court an ethical standard and a set of rules by which we can ensure that their behavior is consistent, as Dick Durbin said, with the highest levels of public service. We can and should expect that from our Supreme Court justices. We know as well the Supreme Court continues to act even while they do not have this unified and omnibus ethics set of principles out there. The Supreme Court going to be entertaining arguments this coming week of this month, the 17th, 18th, 19th, 24th, 25th, and 26th. All of those days are times when our United States Supreme Court is going to be entertaining oral argument on some of the 60 or so cases, two of them from our own Seventh Circuit right here in Wisconsin, Indiana, and Illinois, entertaining oral argument, times when the attorneys will come before them and argue their cases in front of the nine justices. And beyond that, we know well that coming up in about eight short weeks, in late May into early June, maybe into July as well, but certainly within about 2 months from now, Supreme Court is going to be issuing some major decisions on cases that we have talked about in before, decisions involving admissions standards for college entry, a case involving gerrymandering, a significant case coming out of one of our southern states, a case involving free speech and religious liberties when it comes to LGBT rights in our nation, a major case involving immigration enforcement, another one involving the Clean Water Act, another case involving interstate commerce. Yes, it involves pork, but a major case involving the interstate commerce rights of companies in our nation, a major case involving intellectual property as well, involving, of all things, Prince and Andy Warhol. Other cases out there, 60 different cases, some of which are the subjects of opinions being issued right now, others of them going to make June and perhaps even into July a time of huge renewed focus upon our United States Supreme Court as we turn again to their major decisions. We're going to be talking about a lot of those. Along the way, the Supreme Court, even just in the past couple of weeks, added to that 60-case docket in another case under an all-important law that I described before, the Americans with Disabilities Act. Among other things, the ADA requires that hotels identify and describe their accessible features, including guest rooms, in sufficient detail. Supreme Court indicated just recently it's going to take up an oral argument, take up petitions filed about the extent to which the ADA also covers situations where individuals have engaged in testing of the law. And this is a situation where individuals and private companies will put forth testers who, for example, will go into a hotel and ask for accommodations that ensure that the ADA is complied with. And the question in this particular case is whether or not those testers, who again are are actors. They're not truly litigants who have suffered this kind of harm, whether they have standing under the ADA to bring cases against hotels, for example, who have violated the ADA. So that case also coming up, another major case on the docket of the Supreme Court. We're going to hear about that case in the future. We're going to get a decision on it down the road in May and June. Stay with us for that all-important discussion down the road in May and June as we take up those important cases. And join us again next week as well. We talk more about law, about government, justice in America, and the achievement of the rule of law for all of us. Thank you once again for being with me this Saturday morning. Have a good week, everybody.
As the nose tackle for the green and gold.
1993 to 1999, and again 2001 to 2003.
125 games, 292 tackles, 7 sacks, and a Super Bowl ring. But there's more to life than stats, and there's more to life than football.
You're about to find out.
Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, featuring Packers legend Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram.
Saturday and Sunday at 1 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
Hey, son, how are you feeling?
I'm fine, Pops.
What's on your mind?
I can't explain it.
When your kid can't find the language, find the lyrics. Start a conversation at soundedouttogether.org. Brought to you by Ed Council and Pivotal Ventures.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay.
WGBW 1590 AM Denmark. W250 CV Green Bay.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News.